You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You got problems that you ought to be concerned with. Moolah! You don't know how you're supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Get your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's Bad with Money with
Gabe S.
Done.
Hello, and welcome to Bad with Money, a show about finances and feelings where we don't talk down to you. I'm your host, Gabe S. Dunn, and with me today is Carrie Sun. Can you tell my audience who you are and what you do?
Hi, Gabe. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast today. It's such a pleasure to be here. I love your podcast. My name is Carrie Sun. I am the author of the memoir Private Equity, and I used to work in finance. I started my career off as a quantitative equity investment analyst at Fidelity Investments. And then after that, I worked at a couple very large hedge funds. I quit the world of high finance a few years ago to get my MFA in creative writing. And it took a few years, but now I'm out with my first book. And I'm really excited to be speaking with you today.
Okay, so explain any of that. What was your job?
Yeah. Great. So at Fidelity Investments, in college, I had majored in math and finance, minored in economics. And after that, I originally thought I would solve the problem of the stock market. I thought that if I could find some sort of pattern, and this is actually in the book, it wasn't to make money for myself, but I thought I would share it with the world and everyone would kind of be able to get a little bit richer from that. And the reason why I thought that and I wanted to solve the stock market is because, you know, I grew up initially when I was very young in poverty. My parents had just immigrated from China after the Cultural Revolution. And we were really, really struggling financially. Eventually, they got their graduate degrees from Michigan State University, and then we were able to move up to the middle class. But those years really affected me emotionally, psychologically, and I could see how much financial security and money affected my family positively and kind of helped my parents both be in a better mood with each other, with me. And I just really thought that just a little bit more money could really help solve so many family problems. And so I thought that if I were given the chance to work in equity stock markets, maybe I could find a mathematical pattern there and share it with the world. The reality of that experience turned out to be very, very different. I did work on building stock selection models and portfolio optimization and trying to figure out, you know, what factors might be predictive of the stock market. But ultimately, as with many things, the kind of ideal or what you have in your mind about what a situation is going to be and what it is turned out to be very, very different. And the culture of my first job in finance at Fidelity was also very difficult because it was very unkind, I would say, to women and to people of different and marginalized backgrounds. And it just was not supportive in any way. And so I had to quit. And I thought I would do a pivot. I ended up enrolling at Wharton and UPenn. I was in a joint degree program. I got there and then I realized that I didn't really want to go through with my business school degree because school is expensive. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to, you know, either take out loans or spend $200,000 to get my MBA because I felt that afterward, I wasn't sure I wanted to continue on the finance path. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to take on the debt if I wasn't sure that I was going to be in a career afterward that would allow me to pay that back. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just dropped out and spent several years just trying to figure out my life. Mm-hmm. And figuring out one's life, I think, is an expensive endeavor because it takes time and time takes money. Mm-hmm. You have to live. And so I was burning through my savings all that time, but I felt like I had to do it. There was no other way. And this is the start of my book. I was a recruiter reached out to me via LinkedIn with a job opportunity to work as the assistant to a hedge fund billionaire. And I was like, you know, sold to me as a once in a lifetime opportunity. This is going to be amazing. And I threw myself into that recruiting process. It was 14 interviews. And as soon as my recruiter pitched me for this role, someone from their side called and said, can you come in for an in-person interview in 2 hours? You know, and so that just gives you a sense of the pace at which that kind of work and that working style in that world at the center of Wall Street and global finance, how they really think about time and work itself. And so that's the start of my book. And that's how I ended up here. And I wrote the book and I'm here on the podcast today.
Oh my God. Okay. Wow. Okay. You're being very magnanimous, but you got to that job. You're clearly brilliant and you have all these like good intentions. And then what was the culture? Like what's happening? And also what year is this? Cause I'm sure people are listening going, oh, when did she work in finance in the '80s? And it's like, no.
Yes, I worked there from 2014 to the end of 2016. My story kind of ends right when, you know, that unfortunate famous event of the end of 2016.
Sure.
And so it's really kind of showing the 2010s in which there was a very long, record long bull market. And there was still, I think, a tech idealism and utopianism hope to the world that, you know, everything could just work out for everybody if we just work hard and lived well. And, you know, obviously that turned out to be false. And so throughout 2014 and 2016, I think the culture of my job was one of an extreme focus on return on time. There was not a single second that was wasted. you know, sometimes I would be speaking to my boss in the book and I might take an extra second or two to think about an answer and he would cut me off and say, can you speak faster? You know, sometimes I would have to wait outside the bathroom if he was going to the bathroom and then deliver information in the 10 seconds it took him to walk from the bathroom to the next meeting. You know, it was just every second was completely utilized. And even if the second wasn't, your second wasn't working, you were expected to be on call. So when you're on call, I don't consider that actual rest because at any time you might have to completely change your schedule around. And I just think psychologically as workers and as humans, being able to plan your day, plan your next hour and how you work is so important for our sense of agency and power and control over our lives. And I just didn't have that. So there was an extreme pressure to do a lot of work, do a lot of work fast. And it was just this cycle that never stopped. And I completely, by the time I was able to take a breath, 2 years had gone by. I was completely burnt out, both physically and emotionally and mentally. And I knew I needed to make a huge change. And so I quit.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. I don't know if you know, but I'm a business myself, and I have to run everything on my own, and it is very difficult, especially to deliver you a product such as this podcast. Luckily, I have Melissa to help me, and we want to keep all the money that we make. So how do we do that? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit from NetSuite. Everything is so expensive. How do I boost performance? How do I pay everyone? How do I cut costs? There you go. You want inventory? You want financial systems in the cloud? You got it, baby. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/badwithmoney. 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 We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employees agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring in one place so easy. Like, think about how much you have to do in order to hire someone and how much you have to gather, plus scheduling, plus messaging. Like, if I was looking to hire someone, I would feel that it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish that I could use Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Just go to Indeed.com/badwithmoney right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. I have been using Mint to manage my finances, but bad news. Mint has shut down, but here's the good news. There's a better alternative, Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarch.com/badmoney. It is very stressful, confusing, and time-consuming to manage my finances. I try all the apps, as you guys know, and I've just been like flighty with them. They've never stuck. But now I have Monarch, and it is easy to use. It has powerful features like collaboration tools, intuitive design, personalization, product improvements. It's just been really helpful to see everything laid out and especially be able to collaborate if I want to. Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Yeah, we've talked about that a lot here. Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, collaborate on your budget, and get insights on your cash flow and reoccurring transactions. It's the easiest way to manage your household finances. Are you saving for a down payment, a wedding, a dream vacation? Monarch makes it so easy to help you reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Of course, I've been frustrated in the past with personal finance apps that are cluttered with ads. So was Monarch. So they built a new kind of personal finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and constantly improving based on customer feedback. Experience a personal finance app that prioritizes the user experience above all else. We never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/badmoney. That's monarchmoney.com/badmoney for your extended 30-day free trial. Where's the fire? Is it just that there's like a lot of money on the line? Is it self-importance? Why do they think that way?
That is such a great question, because I personally think they don't have to think that way, right? But I think there is a, in sort of that financial world, everything is about kind of having an edge and gaining an information edge and advantage. And the more you can work to try to get that information or that edge is just going to hopefully, I mean, this is the belief of investors, I believe, translate into hopefully more positive returns, both for yourself and for your limited partners, the investors in the fund. So, you know, I think in my book, I'm questioning, is this the right model of success? And is this how we want to work, where every second of our day is totally optimized, and even rest itself is optimized? You know, rest is not real rest. It's to rest so you can work better Monday morning. Even for people who are able to last in that way of work. And I just don't think the attitude of, you know, how long did you last? I lasted 2.5 years at this job. Other people lasted, 10. I just don't think more is better. Like, why are we assigning a higher value to the ability to take burnout and what I think is inequitable treatment and just enduring, I think enduring exploitation on the behalf of bosses and employers. I just don't think that is the way we should be framing the ability to survive burnout. I think the system of work itself and the culture around work, and I'm talking about material conditions here, just has to change. Like, I think my boss in the book was super nice, actually. He never yelled at me. He did give me bonuses, raises, and plenty of gifts. At the end of the day, what I really wanted was I wanted to be heard. I wanted to be seen. And what that means in material conditions is I really needed help. Mm-hmm. I needed an assistant of my own. And I would see him make decisions that are, $100 million decisions in no time. And meanwhile, here I am asking for an assistant, even a part-time assistant. And he just said, no. It was very, very, very difficult to get any change and help and resource help across. And so that's what I mean by improving the material conditions of work itself.
I think there's this element too, where you talked about how long you lasted, where it's like, I survived. I lasted so long in this. I made it. I survived in these like terrible conditions. You know, I think there's this hopefully reframe from, Gen Z to millennials that will do something about this? Because I do think, like, in an industry where you're working, for example, your boss went through those conditions. His boss went through those conditions. And I'm saying his,
yes.
You know, like,
because it was, yes,
the person, then the person who succeeds you is probably a certain type of, I will say, cis straight white man. So like, it's this level of mirroring each other that just keeps rewarding itself. And, you know, and I think, you know, there probably are people listening who are like, well, neither you nor Gabe could hack it.
But why would we want to is my question.
Yeah.
To your point of what are you winning and gaining at the end of that? Gabe, so smart what you just said, because I think about how not too long ago, you know, I'm a millennial. When I was growing up, the kind of concept of work was if you put in your time, you know, probably burnt out, but if you put in your time, your years, if you do the grind, there's some payoff or promised land at the end where it's going to be a little bit easier. You get the corner office, you can, you know, like go on the golf course Friday afternoons, whatever yeah. it is, you know, you want to do. And you're totally right. It's probably a he. And so that is, you know, why you might put in 15 years of burnout just to get to that point. But, you know, I think something happened in the last, I'm going to say probably decade-ish. And I really look at people like Elon Musk is a great example of this, where it's, you get to that level of CEO and all you get is to add more CEO jobs on your plate, you know, and he's mm-hmm. like CEO of multiple companies. And so the point is, once you get to a high level of the C-suite, the corner suite, where you can relax, the status there is no longer like, oh, I'm going to take an afternoon off to kind of recharge or go, you know,
yeah.
do the thing I really want to do. It's like, no, I'm actually going to take the status and become CEO of like five other startups that I'm yeah. doing, you know? And so we're no longer, so that kind of what's at the end of the rainbow there is just more work. It's not, it, you know, any way healthier or a kind of better yeah. relationship with work. So I just, yes, that is, I think, what is in need of reframing. And I think is a generational difference from when I grew up to now.
Do you think that there's, and I've witnessed this, I'm comparing it to entertainment. Do you think that there is this element of I'm a marginalized person. I survived this treatment, or I survived to get to be, because I'm like these guys, to be like these guys, that's rewarded. And when I see another marginalized person who can't play the game, I'm like, well, I don't want anything to do with them, or I don't want to help them, or I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to bring this person up under me or whatever, because I'm still trying to survive and I'm getting rewarded for being like these guys.
Yeah. I think there is a absolute kind of entrenching of the system whereby people in power reward, both in terms of promotions and compensation, those who have similar values to them. And I think just this, like, I toughed it out, so you should, you know. And so my boss in the book, even when I came to him with my burnout, and it was like well documented, I had already been really trying hard to solve it on my own for 2 years mm-hmm. I was trying. And he kind of gave me a lecture on how he was burnt out for 10 plus years. So, you know, if he thinks I'm so tough, and if he said, if I can do it, I think you can too. And, but I don't want to. And also, you know, I mean, I have many sort of critiques and ways to unpack that statement of his, but it's also like, you know, he is an equity owner. He owns his fund. And so his burnout, he's putting in, he gets all the reward of that burnout. Burning out for someone else, it's my white male billionaire boss.
Yeah.
And where he gets to totally decide how he pays me,
yeah.
which I felt like I was doing three jobs and getting paid for one. So on the surface, it's like, was I fairly compensated for my role? I would say in one way, if you're just taking a look at, you know, my job, like, sure. But if you actually take a look at what I was doing and what he expected of me. Like, I don't think it was really fair. And this is why I want to, and my book is titled Private Equity, but because I think giving equity and giving actual ability for other people to both take ownership over their work product and be able to invest in their work and themselves, I think is everything. And I don't want to burn out for someone else and just hope that they recognize my value and hope that they pay me and hope that they promote me after a few years.
Hey guys, Gabe Dunn here. I just wanted to let you guys know that I have a Patreon at patreon.com/GabeSDunn. And on that Patreon, I'm going to start doing live hangs with everyone who is a patron. So if you want to join the Patreon, you can get all these episodes ad-free, videos of our mailbag episodes, extra writing from me, blogs, fiction, other stuff, things that I'm thinking about with regards to money and personal stories, and also now live hangs with me on Zoom once a month. So join the Patreon. And if you're not a member of the Discord, hop on over to the Discord. That's free. The link will be in the description. It's so fun. So many of you guys talk over there. It's like truly popping off. And if you're on the Discord, I would love to see you in the live hang so I get to put a face to a name. So yeah, please join patreon.com/GabeSDunn and come hang out with me. Oh my gosh. Budgeting is wild. I am trying to make progress every day. I am, as you guys know, like deeply into rebuilding my finances. It is very hard to keep motivated, but I am constantly looking at the numbers, constantly like looking at ways to cut stuff, and I'm looking for new ways to save. And when I do, I can find my financial goals easier and still have the occasional treat. With a Chime checking account, you get features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe or get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Learn more at chime.com/badmoney. I have constantly had to deal with overdraft fees my entire life. When I first learned what they were upon getting my first bank account, it was a very rude awakening. I also learned about something when I was writing my book where a lot of banks take out money from your account in the order that makes you have overdraft fees, which is so unfair, but Chime allows you an overdraft of up to $200 with no fees. Join millions of Chime members who are working on financial progress. Chime helps you make progress with fee-free overdraft up to $200. Your next deposit is applied to your balance. Get spotted on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals. No monthly fees or maintenance fees. Over 60,000 fee-free ATMs. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion. Friends give friends a boost. Eligible members get complimentary boosts to increase a friend's SpotMe limit. When you give a boost, they can boost you back to raise your limit. Set up direct deposit into your Chime account. After a qualifying direct deposit of $200 or more, Chime will notify you to enroll in SpotMe. With an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance. Your next direct deposit is applied to your negative balance. Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/badmoney. That's chime.com/badmoney. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Well, it's not even about compensation, the number for compensation. It's the what you're describing that's important, because I think people might say, oh, well, she was making so much money at this job, whatever, which, by the way, you can hoard that money away and never use it. But I do understand that people are like, well, she's probably making six figures. But think about it in terms of your own workplace. Let's say you work at a small, you know, you work at a Gap, you work at a whatever. Like the model is still the same, which is the person at the top makes a huge amount of money. We just had Madeline Pendleton on describing it as a pyramid scheme or an MLM, right? The person at the top makes money. Hey, work under me. I'll give you some of my profits for what you do for me. Get some people under you. They'll work for profits a little bit under you. And nobody is being fairly compensated for what they do. And you could go back and listen to that episode with Madeline, but it's like, you know, that's the thing. It's like, take the model. Don't hate the people working in this system. Take the model and apply it to like your system of career. It doesn't make any fucking sense. And there's no, and it's like, you're working to make someone else wealthy. You know, people understand it when it comes to rents and mortgages, right? They go, well, if you're paying rent, you're paying someone else's mortgage. Yeah. I mean, that's not necessarily true, but yeah. But if you're working yourself to the bone, you're doing that for someone else.
Yes, exactly. I'm working. I'm, you know, in the book, I fall on a treadmill answering my boss's email because I was expected to respond to emails instantly. You know, I'm sacrificing my health physically, mentally. I'm also sacrificing my dreams. Initially, I took this job thinking this was going to be my day job and I wanted to do an evening MFA. You know, that did not happen at this job. And I was just sacrificing all of me, my identity and my time that I will never get back, you know, to fully enrich someone else. And I don't think that's a fair model.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting too. I see. So there was this girl on TikTok and she made this video that was like, your boss mad at you when you miss an 8 a.m. meeting, but you work from 9 to 5. And it's, and the comments, I always look at the comments, and the comments are interesting because some of the comments are like, well, why would you miss a meeting? Or like, just come to the 8 a.m. meeting. I don't understand. And then other people were like, did you notice that it says her job is from 9 to 5? That is the job. And so some people are like, well, why do other people have to come to the meeting and you don't? And like the disparity in the comments is always very fascinating to me because some people might say, well, what, you're going to work at this job? Why would this job, you know, allow you to take a college classes in something else? And it's like, it's none of their fucking business what I'm doing after 5 p.m.
Exactly. Exactly. And to everything you just said, something that I think about a lot is our need to have clearly defined roles that are clearly in the job description. Mm-hmm. And so that TikTok, you know, post that you just talked about with the comments, if it says 9 to 5, it's 9 to 5. And you can't just change the, you know, job description and expect the employee to be okay with it.
Yeah.
Because that's just not fair. You can't unilaterally change the position, you know? And I think, so I really think the defining it and, you know, I think job descriptions that list responsibilities also, I think have been, I think there's like a leakage and a creeping of the responsibilities to just expand to mm-hmm. include anything everywhere all the time. And, you know, certainly my role is just to like, you know, there was, at least one line of the 97 lines, I think there were, one was just to be able to do anything and chip in at any time. And it's like, well, what does that actually mean? You know, mm-hmm. what about Friday at 11:32 p.m.? Like, mm-hmm. it technically means that, you know? And so I think to help just work the system of work in general, I think we need to be clear about these boundaries. And then to also, as a culture, to collectively judge people less for just sticking to their job description. And mm-hmm. I think I have such admiration for people who just stand up for, this is what I'm compensated for. This is what I sign up for. Mm-hmm. And you know, why should I just allow unilaterally my employer to relax those conditions and include more work?
Yeah, this person was saying the response is then, oh, will I be paid overtime for the hour before?
Exactly.
And I was like, ah, exactly. Well, here's the other thing is that in your case, they just fire you and replace you with another drone. And then they, in their minds, go, well, sucks that we hired that Asian woman. We shouldn't have.
Yes, exactly. Ugh. And just, it's, yes. And I feel like there is this attitude of, I felt like in this job, I had to perform kind of a gratitude of like, everyone was reminding me all the time how lucky I was to have this job and, you know, to be in conversation with my boss, to be working for him. And, you know, to be fair to all that, I did feel some of that, right? Like I felt a security at my job that otherwise I wouldn't have. I felt like I very often was doing very interesting things, but the overwhelming feeling was like, why should I be grateful for something when I feel like I work hard, I deserve this. And then the need to perform that gratitude, like he wanted to know that I knew how appreciative he wanted me to express my appreciation. And, you know, I felt like I adequately did, but sometimes I'm sure I didn't. And I just couldn't perform it more because I felt like I was, you know, I felt like I deserved everything because I worked really hard. And yes. And so to your point of, yeah, here's another, just me, I am Asian and I identify as a woman. And they thought perhaps that, I don't know how much of this was explicit, but I think just in general, not only with my boss here, but just I have had a long career in finance. Mm-hmm. Just the idea that like being a woman and being Asian, that I might need the job more or that I might work harder because I need the job more. And so I felt like a lot of my work and background and identity was actually exploited mm-hmm. by my employers. At my first job at Fidelity Investments, when I tried to change because of their really, I would say, just toxic culture with quite a bit of sexual harassment, unfortunately. When I tried to change jobs, I met with a recruiter and the recruiter told me immediately, this is in 2008 or something, 2009, he was like, and he himself was Asian. He said, you have two strikes going against you already for another job. You're Asian and you're a woman. And I just thought like, you know, just to have that framing from someone who's trying to help me get the job is so then the recruiter or someone else might think, well, then if I do get an opportunity, even after having two strikes against me, I must feel so lucky and I will work harder and I will be more appreciative. I will do extra homework and extra work on top of what is required just because I might be so lucky, you know? And mm-hmm. so I absolutely do feel, you know, very lucky in many, many respects. But at the same time, I think that's kind of hiding some of these structural issues of particularly women and people of marginalized backgrounds, their labor being exploited often.
Oh, I don't think you have to feel lucky at all. Fuck them.
Oh, okay.
I don't think you have to feel lucky at all. No, fuck them. That's not what I was saying. The fact that they're even using those as demerits is like ridiculous. No, that, oh, those are strikes against you. And you're supposed to be like, well, how do I fix them? Bitch, no,
yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No, I yeah. don't. You're like,
thank you for
like
saying
being
that.
Like, oh, well, you know, I am coming from a, no, fuck them. I could say that. Sometimes on shows, I'm like, the people are like, yes, I agree. But it's just like, I have to be like, yeah, whatever. So this is just a personal question. Have you seen Fair Play or is that going to be way?
Yes.
You saw it?
Oh, yes. I mean, everyone was like, you have to see it because, well, also, you know, I think I forgot her last name, Chloe something. She's the director, Chloe DeMont. Or
oh, yeah, DeMont.
She also
yeah.
had written for Yeah, DeMont, she had written for Billions, and there actually is a character on Billions, a character based off of me. And I
what?
Met with Dora. Yeah, I think she was in the second season, I believe, and she was the chief of staff, right-hand woman to the major hedge fund manager in Billions named Axe. And she was amazing. I love that character. And so I when I saw Fair Play, with Chloe DeMond as the writer, I believe, and the director, I was like, I have to see this. It's like a relationship set at a hedge fund, and it's all about control, money, but really it's just a psychological war, all out war between mm-hmm. these two characters. And the reason why that movie was so interesting to me is because, so my book is set at work. It's primarily a work story, but there's also a big personal story in there. And one of them is my ex-fiance, and he and I had a relationship, unfortunately, like the two main characters in Fair Play.
You both worked at the hedge fund.
Well, he didn't work at the same hedge fund, but he had worked in hedge funds, and he just was extremely, I will say, he used this word, jealous of any kind of positive movement in my career. Yeah. And he was so jealous of something related to my career, such that he could not even hear me talk about my job. I would mention the name of my company. I would mention my boss, and he would cut me off and say, stop talking about him. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow. And the better I performed at my job, the more he tried to undermine me by controlling other aspects of my life, including my diet, my tone of voice, my emotions. And it was just a full out, I think, psychological war. And it had to do with power dynamics in relationships and money and control. So yeah, sorry. That was a long-winded answer to your question of Fair Play.
No.
Yeah.
Your turn. No, it's very relevant and I think relatable. And I'm sorry that happened. And like, I think like there is the plot of Fair Play is this couple that is like sort of semi-perfect, and they get engaged and they both work at this hedge fund and their relationship is secret, and they think that he's going to get promoted, and then she gets promoted and he loses his fucking mind slowly over the movie, and all of his like stuff comes out, toxic misogyny and jealousy and all these things that he thought of himself or whatever. It's horrifying. It's like a horror movie, but it's real.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Okay, sorry. I'm still stuck on she put a character in Billions about you. You consulted with her?
I consulted with the I think they're co-showrunners, Brian Koppelman and David Levine.
Wow.
And they were the ones that asked me to come in to, I went into the Billions writers room and they asked me to speak about my job and just who I am as a character. And, you know, it was very interesting because I thought that they might focus on my firm or more my work relationships, and they really cared about me as a character. And that's also, that was a very clear moment in my life when I, you know, I was sitting across from them. It was a table full of writers. So mm-hmm. It was like eight or 10 writers or something. And we were having lunch, and I was really like, I don't, you know, thinking this to myself, but I don't want to be doing what I'm doing. I want to be doing what you're doing. Aww. They were writers. They were brilliant. Mm. Like, they understood both the technical workings of hedge funds, but also just the sharp psychological aspects of these games that people play, especially when power and, you know, capital and high amounts of money are at stake and in play. And it was just, I just thought they were the most brilliant people ever. And so at the end of that interview, Brian asked me, like, he said, you're so interesting. We were originally going to make this character a man. I think now we'll have to make her a woman. Can we make this character Chinese too? Or is that going to be too revealing and obvious? And I told him, no, go ahead. And then when I watched the show, you know, she was in fact super brilliant and super amazing. And they made her a woman of color. I think she went to West Point, it was like years ago, so I can't.
Yeah, remember. Yeah, yeah.
It's just, she, a Black woman of a color, went to West Point, super sharp, and was just really able to speak confidently with an authority. And she would not let, it was all men around her, kind of diminish her own sense of self-worth. And mm-hmm. I thought that was incredible.
That's so interesting to come from this back. I think a lot of times with writing, people come from these situations, these backgrounds, but they're not able to convey to other people what happened because it is so subtle. The manipulation is so subtle. The ability for things to be toxic is so subtle. You know, people will say, you said, my boss didn't scream at me. But that's like, you understand that that's like an abuse tactic, right? Where you're like, well, he never yelled at me. And I was thinking when you said that, the bar is on the floor. Like, what do you mean he never yelled at you? Like, and I'm not sort of pushing you, but I am saying, like, you know, it is this thing where you lose track of what's normal and you start to be like, look, he never yelled at me and he did give me bonuses. Yeah, that's called a job.
Yes, exactly. Like, that should be just
that's a job, yes. Carrie. Like, that's, you know, but I think we're taught these things that become normalized where you're like, well, I don't want to seem like I'm complaining. Or, you know, and I think that's only really asked of, you know, a certain subset of person. So,
yes,
you know, I do think that then to come out of that experience and be able to explain it in a book and be able to like hope that people like get it. I understand it's hard because look, I look at the comments on TikTok. Clearly people are not into subtlety. So, you know, I do think that if you're listening to this and you are having these similar thoughts or you work somewhere where you are thinking like, well, it's not that bad. Your threshold for what is not that bad is constantly being manipulated into rising.
Exactly.
That's what's happening.
That's what's happening. And only with time and distance do I realize now that I was being set up to fail and that my bar for, you know, quote, a good billionaire, it was just so low. I'm like, you know, I was telling myself, well, he's great compared to all the other billionaires. And I'm like, but why, you know, I should have super high, you know, moral and ethical and behavioral expectations of every billionaire. You know, it's not like good for billionaires. It's so, I love what you're saying. Yeah. It's, the question is, where is the bar set and why? And why is that the assumption of behavior? And why can't we raise our assumptions for equitable treatment, you know, from billionaires? Like, I think that's
why important. Was he a billionaire? How did he get his money?
He grew up fairly, by fairly, I mean, very, very privileged already in these networks of money, capital, private school, boarding school, East Coast, elite. Okay. And through those networks, he was able to, you know, make connections with friends and certain people who eventually introduced him to this kind of major figure in the hedge fund space. Mm-hmm. And this major figure in the hedge fund space took him in. He worked as an analyst there. And then when he was ready to go out on his own, you know, he's fairly early, his mentor just was like, you know, here are some millions of dollars for you to go out on your own. And, you know, it's too easy. And so it's like, you know, I think there's an interesting question, like, is he self-made? You know, he didn't inherit his billions, but at the same time, being in those networks, which are closed to certainly people like me and many other people, if you don't already have access to those networks from the beginning, you know, I think time is of the essence here, because with just this financial idea of compounding, you know, he was able to getting these networks early, start his career early, and kind of start his fund when he was still really young. And therefore, it's kind of like one of the things about Warren Buffett is if you invest and if you keep on investing over 50 years, compounding will take care of, if you do it well, will take care of a lot of your wealth, exponential increase in wealth. That's how he made his billions. And so when I started working for him, he had debuted on a list, and you know, there are all these lists, of the youngest billionaires in America. Sure. So
what is the thought process, do you think, behind, I don't think I'll solve world hunger today? If you don't know, it's fine, because I'm asking you, like, what does a crazy person think?
this is such a fantastic question, because I think something I think a lot about with respect to my former boss, because he really did care. And, you know, I don't know about now, but certainly when I worked with him, he cared about ethics, he cared about morality, and he cared to be a, you know, so-called, like, he would never use this term, but good billionaire.
Sure.
He just really cared about doing the right thing. When writing this book, I was thinking, you know, he could quit if he wanted to.
Yeah.
And what is keeping him there? To, you know, he has X billions of dollars. Why is he still working, still burning out to make X 2X, you know? And so he even tells me that I asked him at one point, it was one of these rare moments where I could tell he was a little more open than he otherwise normally would be. And we talked about, I asked him, you know, what was your American dream? And he answered so quickly, like without even thinking, and it was to be a surgeon. He really wanted to be a surgeon. And I just was like, well, you know, I why are you a manager? You know, like, I think whatever is keeping a certain, you know, I don't want to speak for all, but I think my former boss is not the only person who might think this way. I think for a lot of these hedge fund billionaires, I think that what's keeping them there is something beyond making the next billion.
Yeah.
It has something to do with the story they tell themselves, about their own identity, about their own worth. And it's just really hard to change people's stories about themselves. And when they tell themselves they need to do something for some reason, you know, he needs to do it for a reason other than money, I think.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know for sure, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, appreciate you diving into the psyche. I guess I asked sort of an impossible question, but well, where can people find you and your book and more about you? Thank you so much for being so open on the show.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today, Gabe. Like, I also have to say that I think I read somewhere that maybe you wrote for Big Mouth.
I did, yeah. Correct?
Okay. I have three epigraphs in my book. This epigraph didn't make it in, but I am obsessed with this quote from Big Mouth. And I don't know if you know it. You definitely do. I think it's with Coach Steve, where he says something like, in the future, your options are to be a Lyft driver or a billionaire. And I just really love that. And that was kind of, I was throwing around, like, you know, six different epigraphs. Unfortunately, this didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
But I just love how that so succinctly and brilliantly captured the winners take all society and economy that we're living in, where it's either you're spiraling up to be a billionaire or you're kind of stuck in this world of Lyft driving, you know? Yeah. And so those are the two options. And I in this podcast and with you, I question why, and could there be more options, you know? And so yeah. That's what I'm trying to raise these exact questions in my book, Private Equity. And people can find me on Instagram. I'm at Carrie E. Sun, CarrieYISun. Anyone can feel free to email me through my website, carriesun.com. Thank you, Gabe. It was wonderful to speak to you today.
Bad with Money with Gabe Shane Dunn is a production of Noted Bisexual, produced by Melissa D. Montz and Diamond M. Print Productions, edited by Diane King, post-production sound by Coco Lorenz, and music by Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin, and Jack Dolgen, as sung by Sam Barbera. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.